You're listening to WWBC Coco, Melbourne, Titusville, 1510 AM, as well as W234BI, Coco, Rockledge, and W264AS, Rockledge, Melbourne, Palm Bay, and 100.7 FM.
Coast. This is Sita McGee on Viewpoint with Sita and Friends right here in sunny Coco, Florida. Real sunny and hot Florida. Melbourne, Florida, Coco, Florida, wherever we are. We are heard on AM 1510 WWBC, FM 94.7, 99.9, 100.7, and everywhere on God's magnificent planet. And when I tell you everywhere, we mean everywhere.
Everywhere is exactly right. We're on 1510 WWBC. You can hit that listen live button, and you can hear us on any one of your listening devices, and also download the show from that exact location. Or if you'd like to hear the archive show a couple of days later, you can search it on our website or search by name, search by, I think, also by category. You can find any one of the shows on SitaMediaInc.com, and then we also share it on our Facebook pages and all of our social media connections as well. Since Sita is getting so hot on TikTok, we gotta,
oh my goodness.
We gotta get some TikTok stuff going.
So for our listeners who are tuning in on Mondays, we sit here in the studio. It's kind of sort of like an extension of our home, of our living room. Danny runs our board. Ellen is my right hand. She's my co-host, and she does everything behind the scenes to make sure that our show is as successful as it is 14 years on air. Today's no different. We speak with people who are selling a book, writing a book, wants to know how to blog, how to journal, people who want to run for office, folks who want to learn how to save money, people who want to give away money. We want to talk to people in nonprofits, whatever it is, tailoring, banking, sewing, cooking, cleaning, whatever it is. It's a show. It's called Sita and Friends, and we talk.
Right.
We make
today,
a lot of friends here, and today is no different.
Today is about living our best life, though.
Woman going rogue.
I feel it.
That's what it is, and
That's right.
Feel it. So I had somebody else who was going to take the first segment today, and I said, nah, I'm going to move that person to another day. And have my friend Eva Sipasad. She is on a boat in France. And I said, how great it would be to have Eva call in from France and speak, and then have Karen on the second segment speaking about her road trip and discovering herself in the beautiful Americas in the second segment. So for our listeners who are tuning in, our show is fun, it's interesting, it's very educational, and we do give out valuable information, whether you want to learn how to live, where to live, or to live with.
That's right, exactly.
So Eva and I met a few years ago, again, on social media, and I looked at her last name, and I'm like, she must be Indian. And then, sure enough, she's a Trini, like myself. So I call her my Trini sister. And then, lo and behold, I saw her traveling all over the world. I'm like, what is going on over here? But anyways, she's on the phone. She'll be chatting with us in a minute. Eva and her family immigrated to the United States in 1982. She was sponsored by a relative. Her parents went on, as all immigrants do, to work very hard and sacrifice and have a new life in the United States and assimilate into this culture and give their children whatever they could, which is their very best. Her father was referred to a job as a bus driver with Liberty Lines in New York City, and her mom also worked in New York City. Lots of stuff going on with her family, but I don't want to waste all our time talking about her family. I want to talk about Eva, and she'll give us a little background about her education and all the great things she did. She was a first-generation college graduate and accepted into New York University. Oh boy, her bio is extensive, and it's almost as if I'm speaking to myself or another immigrant. So Eva, we're excited to hear you from your riverboat in France.
I'm excited to be here. Thank you so much for having me. I am in Macon, France. So Macon is spelled like Macon, Georgia. Mm-hmm. And they actually have a street named Macon, Georgia, USA here, because there are a lot of dedications to American cities because of World War II, which is kind of cool. It makes me feel at home while I'm here.
Yeah, and I was just saying to our listeners and to Ellen and Karen as well that you and I met online on social media. You were volunteering on President Obama's campaign back then, and then you went on to work on Tom Sayers' campaign in Los Angeles. And our second guest today, Karen Moser. Karen is actually giving you the thumbs up, Karen Weber. Is giving you the I have so many Karens too.
I know. I was like, wait a sec.
So you know what was funny when I was preparing for the show? I kept putting in on Facebook Karen Moser, and I'm like, wait a minute, why am I doing that? It's Karen Weber. Anyway, so Karen Weber is a friend of mine as well, and she's an author, and she's going to be talking the second segment about her road trip. But she's given me and you the thumbs up for everything you have done in your life so far. So I think you just met another friend in Miss Karen Weber over here.
So, oh my God, I love it.
Yes. So tell our listeners a little bit about yourself, and how did you end up leaving the United States and end up in a riverboat in France?
Okay, first of all, it is a seafaring boat. We're just on the river right now. I just have to clear that up because, you know.
That's right.
You know, respect to the boat. Otherwise, they get mad and they cost you a lot of money.
Yeah.
I ended up here because it was, you know, we all went through the pandemic and we all kind of went inwards and it kind of made our world smaller. And I really missed being around people and meeting people and exploring and traveling. And a friend of mine made an offhand comment, you know, he could probably buy a boat but not very much and live in Europe but not very much. And I'm like, I've always wanted to do that, actually. And I started looking. And I was also getting a master's at the time, and I was like, I should actually do that. But the thing that really precipitated it was the weekend after Thanksgiving. I got a phone call from a doctor at a hospital that my mother was on life support, and I was shocked because I had talked to her the day before, and I knew she was sick, but I didn't know how sick she was. And from Saturday morning, learning that she was on life support, we lost her Sunday night, and this just is what I wasn't prepared for.
Well, was this in the States? I assume she did not go home.
Yeah,
to Trinidad. Okay,
it was in the States. She was in Wilmington, North Carolina, and it was one of those things that happened so quickly. I wasn't prepared for it. And then 2 weeks later, my brother, who is 3 years older, he had been diagnosed with cancer in 2019, and we had been preparing and knew that, you know, his time was limited. He passed away 2 weeks later, and losing almost half your family in a 2 week period is just, it just knocks you for a loop, and you realize our time here on the planet is not a given. And we just have to make the most of each day that we have.
Yeah, you know, I often write that on my Facebook posts, on my social media, that life is a journey. I always say it's an earthly journey, right? And a lot of people don't really think about those words, but it actually is. I mean, I say to myself all the time that I only have maybe 10 to 15 good years left because I'm 59 years old. And I'm like, I work in an industry where we see people at the end of life, and they'll say to us, I stopped running when I was 65, or my arthritis really kicked in when I was 70, my eyesight, my hearing, you know, things happen, and people don't understand how great it is to be able to tie your shoes, to breathe, mm-hmm. to cut up your own food, to put the sweetened low in your coffee and sit there and enjoy it, because life is short. So you took the bull by its horns and you said, look, after all this grief and tragedy, I am going to do something for Eva. I'm going to make her happy and self-love. I think that's what you did.
Yeah, I think it was what I did. And, you know, I was reading recently where the life expectancy in the U.S. is 76. And it's been really hitting me hard this week in that no one in my immediate family has made it to 76. And I'm the oldest person in my immediate family. And I have to get there. I absolutely have to get there. I want to make each day count, each year count.
Yes. So, after the pandemic, what was the first country you went to after you acquired your boat?
So, before, I was planning a vacation before I bought the boat, and the boat I found faster than I had planned on. So, I actually went on vacation to Italy, where I hadn't been in 20-something years, and it was my first time back to Venice. The first time I went there was 2002, and last summer was the first time I had been back, and that was my first time being around people since the pandemic, and the first place that I had visited is it really post-pandemic? Can you say that?
Yeah,
I know. I'm not sure yet.
We're not sure. So do you have a companion with you? I mean, who is helping you with the supplies and the gas and the maintenance and all the stuff that you need on a boat?
So, the last few years in the U.S., I was living with a really good friend of mine, Fred, and he's the one that read the article and was like, hey, what about a boat? And I'm like, sure. And that's something he's always wanted to do as well. And he's a very good friend of mine, and we traveled last summer together, and we've been living on the boat since he got here in September, I got here in November, and a lot of this stuff, he, like, does a lot of the stuff that I should be doing, but I'm still kind of a princess, you got to make sure that you have water in every day. We are usually moored, so we're hooked up to electricity. Living on a boat is kind of like camping, and I think he can relate. I grew up poor. I don't care to be camping. No. I need electricity, running water, and all the conveniences. But I'm doing it with a friend, and we're exploring and figuring it out together.
So I would assume that you're running into other, I have to say, boat addicts as you travel, and you're realizing that actually less is more, and you don't need the white picket fence and the brick and mortar houses or buildings to make you feel as if you are home. You have found your home.
Yeah, that's true. We hang out with other boat people who also have simplified their lives, and some of them live on their boats full time. Others, they spend maybe 9 months out of the year on their boat. So, yeah, we've all kind of, like, scaled down our lives. Unfortunately, I still have a storage unit of furniture and stuff in Charleston, South Carolina. But, yeah, I've definitely downsized a lot of the things that you accumulate through life.
And you're a Trini gal, and you still have Trini family. How do they feel about you getting on that boat and just taking off? And I know you're planning at some time to cruise the Mediterranean as well. So how are they looking at you and saying, what on earth is going on with Eva?
I think most people are excited for me. Most people that know me are excited, and they're probably not surprised because I've not exactly followed a traditional path. As a Trini girl, because I just was never, you know, the one who was going to settle down and get married and have kids. That was just never going to be my life, and it never has been.
Right, and you know what? You're happy, and it shows. It shows, like, every journey you take, you're getting the kind of happiness that you deserve. And I've watched you work on the campaigns for the presidential campaigns, and then I watch you work with the campaign in for Tom, is it Tom Steyer? Yeah. And you are a person that cares about the environment so much. And so talk to us a little bit about how that campaign helped shape your life and to bring you to this point where you are now, to just appreciate the clean waterways and the people that you meet in different countries. And yes, that less is more. And it's all about the planet, right? You tie it all into one little ribbon at the end of the day, and you're doing your part on God's magnificent planet.
Yeah, I loved working on Tom's Star campaign. He was the candidate who, his platform was all about climate crisis. And he actually changed the way we talk about it and the way we think about it. There's everything ties into the climate. Like when we think about our rights as people and the opportunities that we have access to and the water that we drink and the air that we breathe, it all ties back to the climate. So for me on the boat, it's I definitely am living a more sustainable life. You basically have the amount of groceries that you need for a couple of days. You recycle everything. You're aware of how much water that you use. And currently my boat runs on diesel, but I'm hoping that we can find places where we can use biodiesel so that our carbon footprint is lessened. And one of the things I'm looking to do is to add solar panels so that we're less dependent on electricity. So I'm looking for ways to make this old boat more sustainable and more less of a carbon footprint is just going forward. And just consuming less is a huge deal. I mean, I used to have so much waste when I lived in the U.S. You just, buy groceries, put stuff in, and you throw away a lot of food. And we just don't really do that. We buy what we need for, like, 2 or 3 days and use it. And it's all fresh and, very little processed food. It's better for your body. I mean, it's just all better for you. And hopefully I will hit that U.S. life expectancy of 76 years old.
Yeah, and so I'm sure you're coming in contact with people, right, obviously from all walks of life and all different cultures. And knowing the way you like to organize, I'm sure you have already hooked up with a group or people or professionals who are doing something for the planet or for each other there. So talk to us a little bit about what you're doing in your spare time.
So, in my spare time, I'm actually kind of connecting more with what I can do back in the U.S. because, as you know, I am extremely political, and I can't not be involved with that. So one of the things I want to do is to address some of the things that are happening back in the States with the latest affirmative action decision by the Supreme Court and rolling back of Roe. I mean, I can work on being an activist while I'm on my boat. So I'm connecting with people where I can work virtually and still have an impact on activism. I'm also coming into contact with people from around the world who have chosen to simplify their lives. And they also see, they're trying to, get away from some of the ugliness that we're all facing, but they're also trying to kind of create a different way of life, and it changes the way your brain works. Where,
We are the environment, right? And you're right. There's so much hate and fear and at times racism and division. And it's nice for you looking in from where you're at. You're looking at us here back home and saying, "How can I make a difference?" Right? And you're in the thick of things there in France, where we just saw the riots that a young man was killed by the police officers. And, the first thing I say when I see something like that, that's another life that's gone, that's lost. And I think people need to be more empathetic and more sympathetic to each other, because at the end of the day, we all want the same things, right? We want food, water, shelter. We want to practice our religion and be free. And basically, we want to enjoy our life on God's planet. So you're there. Did you have a chance to either see the riots or hear about them or hear people talking about them? And I know that your empathy would probably kick in with something like that.
Yeah, definitely. So I did until recently belonged to a Facebook group of women who own boats, and many of them, it's supposed to be a place where you give each other tips and, you know, stuff that's going on, but I kept seeing people posting about the riots in different places in France about that, but they weren't concerned about a young man being murdered who was unarmed by police, and they weren't talking about, hey, that's not right, that shouldn't happen. It was all about their own selfish point of view, where, yeah, it's easy to be on your boat and away thing, but this stuff is still happening, and it affects people, and maybe put your privilege aside for a while and show some empathy for people who are dealing with these situations. And I did get into a back and forth where I was like, you know, your group is just not worth my time because you don't share my values. You don't have the empathy for what happened to this person. They kept bringing up things, well, she stole that car. And I'm like, but did he deserve to die? Was that police officer's life in danger? I mean, aren't these questions you should ask yourself before you repeat a talking point? So, yeah, I have not been able to stay quiet, but I've learned that that's just not me. Yeah. I am going to say something.
Well, a lot of times it's not what you say, right? It's how you say it. And mm-hmm. So I think you're one of those people, those lovely friends of mine. I'm so glad that you're in my tribe, that you know how to reach people and you know how to come across, because that's one of the things we learned when we were young children being trinnies, is we know how to mama guy and get a point across. And uh-huh. I know how to do that, you know.
I learned more trinny words on this show, I tell you.
But I wanted to ask.
I have a question before you go, because many of our listeners are thinking, oh, well, that's great. She's living on a boat. She's doing. But you didn't have a history of like living on a boat. So I just want our listeners to hear from you that, you know, about what your transition was like and how you learned all of these things. Because I'm sure you know how to do a little mechanical stuff on the boat now that you probably never knew how to do before. Right? Mm-hmm. All kinds of different things. Where did you learn? And how did you get the confidence to be able to go out and live on your own on a vessel like that?
So what's really helpful is, like, boat people are generally really helpful to each other. And I ended up asking the person that handled the boat sale. And he referred me to a really nice man. He and his wife have been living on their boat for about 14 years. And he is an engineer, and he does this where he helps out people. And he taught us how to actually, you know, a list of things that we needed to learn about the boat. He also taught us how to drive it on the river and gave us lessons. And I call him our boat PhD. So having someone kind of mentor you on the stuff you need to learn is important. And it's not that hard to find people who are helpful. Like, both people just want to help each other out.
Right, and even the minimization that you have to do on the boat. Like, people I don't know about you, but I know someone that wound up living on their boat for, I think, 3 years, but they had to pare down from a 2,800-square-foot house.
Yeah, well,
moved on a boat.
Right, you learn how to live with less, right?
Exactly.
So, Eva, can you anchor the boat just about anywhere, or you have to have permission from that area?
So in France, you can anchor anywhere on the river. However, I like having access to electricity and water. So for me, it makes sense to go to a marina. And like going forward, like we were having some service stuff done, but going forward, we'll probably spend like 1 to 2 nights at different marinas. The goal is to get to the south of France and then head over to Spain, where at least the language is easier.
Okay, and what about a pet? Can you live on a boat with a pet?
I would like a pet. I see other people with dogs on their boats. Right now, as I'm figuring out, I do not have a pet. I miss my pets. My brother and his kids ended up with my cats, and they have nice homes. But, people have dogs on their boats. At some point, maybe I'll have a pet, like once I kind of settle in a bit more.
And here's another question for you. I'm sure now that you're meeting a lot of boat people. A sailboat versus a motorboat, which one is best for living aboard?
It depends on what you like. A sailboat has less space, so you really have to tear it on if you're on a sailboat. I prefer a motorboat where at least you have cabins and bathrooms and a kitchen. I would go with a motorboat if you're going from being a non-boater to being a new boater.
Wow. And, you know, I'm just amazed at what you're doing. It's not something I would do, although I could definitely dream about doing it. And you make a lot of us so happy because you take us along on your journey with you, for those of us who follow you. Now, I know that you're going to be doing something great tomorrow to celebrate America's birthday. I'm sure you met other nice people there who are Americans. And what are you guys doing tomorrow?
It all comes down to, we have hot dogs. We're making baked beans, which is relatively easy to do. So just really celebrating America with having the food. There will not be any fireworks, but, you know, in 10 days, it'll be Bastille Day and there'll be fireworks to celebrate that.
Yeah, and I'm sure one of those people, Eva Sipasad, who is saying that in this instance, social media and a web allows you to stay connected with being an activist as well as connecting with like-minded people so that you could enjoy living on your boat, so that you could enjoy the festivities, so you can have assistance when you need it for the boat and food and supplies. This is one of the times when I have to give social media a high five because you seem to get along just well with it.
I do. Every now and again, I piss people off, but I think that's the right thing.
You're living the life, girl.
Also, I am making a traditional American sangria to celebrate the 4th. Right? That's traditional.
That's traditional, absolutely.
So when are you writing your book? I know it's coming. It's got to come because from where you came from to where you're at now, higher education, working on campaigns, and now after experiencing such loss and tragedy, you decided that, you know what, I'm going to take some time to be my own best friend. And my friend Karen had the name for your book already. Tell her what the name is, Karen.
Oh, yeah? What is it?
Women Going Rogue.
I love that. Yeah. Reclaiming Rogue, Going Rogue. I like it. I hadn't really considered. So first of all, when Tito was trying to talk me into doing this, I was like, I'm not that interesting. I don't know why you want to interview me.
Because there are people who live vicariously.
Yes. Well, and you're proving to us that people don't need the brick and mortar and the gate and the code and all that stuff to live and have a good life and a fulfilling life. You just have to believe in yourself and find a happiness within. And that's what you've done.
Yeah, I mean, you really just have to, if you can be happy with simple things in life, I mean, that's all you need.
Well, send us some pictures tomorrow after the 4th of July picnic. And thank you so much for taking the time to call in from France on the river in your boat. And you came across so clear as though you're sitting right here with us. And when you come back to the States, you have an invitation to come and sit with me on the swing.
There you go. Yeah, Sita got a new swing.
I will take you up on it. I appreciate y'all having me. This is so wonderful.
And eat mangoes.
Yeah. I think... Karen Weber is not in her head to almost everything you said. I think you just made yourself a new friend. She is going to send you a friend request, right?
Yeah, virtually.
Yes. She better.
And Ellen, too.
Me, too.
Okay, Elle, take it away.
Well, we are going to listen to our sponsors real quick, but stay tuned for more Viewpoint with Sita and Friends with Karen Weber. We'll be right back.
Cloud 9 Mattress and Furniture is a family-owned furniture dealer featuring the best and most affordable brands. They offer all servicing for free. The delivery, setup, and home, removal of old furniture, and warranty. Work with a reputable and experienced local business as they strive for excellence with their customers. Scotty's been in the mattress and furniture business for 32 years. You can shop online call or stop into the showroom to place an order. They are conveniently located inside the Merritt Square Mall and service all of Brevard County in Central Florida. Super savings sale happening now. That's Cloud 9 Mattress and Furniture, 321-459-2473. Visit them on the web at Cloud 9, that's Cloud number 9, furniture.com. Again, 321-459-2473 for Cloud 9.
Welcome Mattress to MedFast Urgent Care. We are Brevard County's largest urgent care network. MedFast is now open at 7:30 a.m. every day. That's right, 7:30 a.m. every day. We will get you in and out so you can get back to your day. When you are sick or injured, MedFast is here for you 7 days a week. Think fast, think MedFast. With 18 locations, there's a MedFast near you.
Are you longing for a taste of Louisiana? Lizette's Cajun Bistro is the place to be. They offer Cajun and Creole staples as well as American, vegan, and vegetarian options. The restaurant is located at 2447 North Wickham Road, Unit 146. All menu items are prepared daily from scratch and made to order. Dine-in or takeout as well as outside seating. Live music on selected weekends. So the next time you have a taste for Louisiana, stop by Lizette's Cajun Bistro, 2447 North Wickham Road.
Located in Titusville, Florida, Dixie Crossroads has been serving great-tasting seafood, char-grilled steaks, prime rib, chicken, fresh salads, and their famous corn fritters for over 31 years. The menu features the very best local shrimp and fish from Port Canaveral and ranges from low-cost sandwiches and baskets to high-end seafood combos. Visit this Florida favorite at 1475 Garden Street in Titusville. That's Dixie Crossroads. 321-268-5000. 321-268-5000 or visit them on the web at DixieCrossroads.com.
Is a certified public accounting and a registered investment advisory firm with over 30 years of
productive relationships. There's something special about the place we call home. It's the place we live our lives, spend time with family and friends, and make our own. At St. Francis Reflections Hospice, we consider it a privilege to care for you wherever your home may be. We put our hands, hearts, and skills into providing high-quality hospice care in your home. To learn more about how we reflect life, love, and compassion, visit www.reflectionslsc.org.
Welcome back, dear listeners. What a robust, fun segment we had on Viewpoint with Sita and Friends with my friend, Eva Sipasa, who called in all the way from France to chat with us about her journey on her boat. Our second segment on AM 1510 WWBC, FM 94.7, 99.9, and 100.7 is with my friend Karen Weber and Ellen. People can listen to Karen, the author, the masseuse, another traveler, online as well. On
1510 WWBC. You hit that listen live button. You can get us on all of your listening devices, or all of the archive shows are also on 1510wwbc.com. And then you can also find them on cedamediainc.com, where you can search by name or topic.
I tell you, when you talk about heating up the airwaves, we are heating up the airwaves because, you know, not all our shows should be about people wanting to sell something or a service or product. Some of the shows have to be fun, right? And we all enjoyed her segment because you almost feel like you're on the boat with her.
Well, the whole point is to find the life worth living, right? The life that you don't have to take a vacation from.
Right, right.
And, you know, and that's all about what she's doing, is that she's living her best life. She's providing her family with the food that she needs on this boat, and she's figured it out, and she's taking care of the planet while she's doing it. It's like, other than that trifecta, I can't think of a better way to live your life.
Well, she is by herself, no family, but she has
friends.
She's
taking care of herself. Her family is herself, because she's really found her niche in this world.
Yes, And our second segment, Karen is going to be talking about her book. It's called Crossing America, Finding Home. And Karen is a freelance writer. She's a mother of four young adult children living and working in various places throughout the United States. She's been an educator, a hospitality industry service provider. She currently holds license in several states in therapeutic massage specialist, which is how we met. And she's a love of animals, especially dogs and horses. And she enjoys her creative pursuits and so much more. She enjoys her grandson, visiting her mom. She loves Satellite Beach. She's getting into bicycle riding. And she just had mangoes offered to her right off the roadside. It's like we could talk forever about Karen Weber. So anyway, so you're here. And I'm so glad you made a trip back home.
I made a trip back across the nation just to be here.
I know you did. And I'm so grateful. And as I skimmed your book, and I couldn't read like page every single page, but as I read the book, I'm like, she has favorite states.
Oh yeah. Well.
You have some states that really where you call home, and is because of the experience that you had as a child or people you met growing up at your grandma's or with your mom, and those places are near and dear to you. So talk to us about your inspiration for writing this book. Why write the book? It's beautiful. Something, you had an aha moment.
It was an empty nester's aha moment.
Yeah. Tiffany.
I've always written from the time I was very young and was encouraged by my grandmother. But there comes a time in life, I'm middle age or a little beyond, so we're not going to talk about exact numbers, but you start questioning what you have been doing in your life. I was a stay-at-home mom for 18 years and homeschooled for many. which was great. I would not change that part of my life, but there is something more. And it's not just to do with self-discovery, but it's about, as Eva said, reconnecting with the earth, our planet, and people at a grassroots level. And being able to do that with some degree of self-confidence.
Yeah, and you've done that so flawlessly. You sit in the car. You just drive. You've got Millie. Is it Millie?
I had two dogs that traveled with me, both of which have passed in the last few months.
Tilly and Willie. And so you just and you stay calm. You just keep driving until you get to where your destination. You find a job, find a place to live, and you continue doing your massage therapy until the next time to move. How do you do it?
I don't know. When one door closes, another one opens.
You have a lot of faith.
I do.
And you trust.
And I wouldn't be able, I would not have been able to take the journey that is documented in this book without faith.
That's right. And one of the pages, I think it's page 122, you wrote something, and it's so profound, and it's at the core of all of us, where you said, we were all born for a reason into a time that is pivotal, destined to become history. Who we are and how we relate to one another is what's important. And that is so true. That's exactly what Eva just talked about as well.
Right. And that is home. Home is not just a geographical place. It's relationships with people and our planet and the animals that we share it with.
Yeah. How did your children feel about the book after it was published? Because
it was ironic that I, in part, wanted to put this together for them as a legacy, so that they would understand their mother was about more than just being their mother. We all have callings, and I've always felt like one of my callings was to adventure, to write, and to report honestly with integrity.
Yeah. You, Kentucky. Talk about Kentucky. You love the state of Kentucky.
I can't explain it. There's something about Kentucky that every time I go back across the border, has felt it's
the bluegrass state, right?
I call it my heart home, and I can't explain it.
Yeah,
I found out recently, about a year ago, when I was working in Versailles. They say Versailles, not Versailles. Sorry, yeah.
Yeah. I'm glad because I mispronounced.
I learned that when I moved to
Kentucky. Yeah, I mispronounced a few words of myself, so I'm kind of glad.
There's in Paris, Kentucky too. But anyway, I found out that I have relatives on my grandmother's side, my maternal grandmother's side, who were actually born in the county where I was working. And when I would drive back through all the horse pastures on my long commute, it was not too hard. But to find out that some of my relatives actually were born there and were pioneers and kept going south and to Texas or Missouri.
And you already had that connection with the state prior to you knowing that?
No, yes, but it was because of a dear friend that is still a dear friend. And when you go to a new place, you see it with different eyes. You see it through eyes of a child. Everything is wondrous. We used to have a small general store in a small farm in northeastern Kentucky, and I had taken multiple photographs, and I had put them up around the top of the store, just of the area. People would come in and go, "Oh, wow, where is that?" And I go, "Right up around the road and down that holler."
Yeah.
And they go, "What?" I said, "Go back and look at it again."
Yeah.
You know, we so often things become too familiar.
That's right.
We miss the wonder.
Yes. Like we had as children.
Yeah.
Yeah. So as you document in your journey, and you actually had a lot of journals, and that's where you got the book, the idea from, because you took your journals and turned them into your book. But we all hear that song by John Denver.
Take me home,
country road. And I'm sure Ellen could sing that song for us before we go.
A million times a week.
You could sing it. I think you should sing that for her today. But as I read your book and I was reading, I was thinking about that song. That song has a lot of meaning that people actually don't take the time to listen to the words of it. But for you, that song actually is near and dear to you.
And singing, as
you
I was
sang
driving,
it as you drove it.
Oh, I sang a lot. I sing all the time when I drive. And it's gotten me into trouble a couple of times. I ran out of gas one time in Kansas because I wasn't looking.
Okay, we are totally sisters now,
because
that exact thing happened to me. And the worst part was is I didn't know where I was. So I had to wind up calling the police to have them track my cell phone. So because I couldn't find a mile marker. I didn't know what road I was on.
I could see the next filling station, the next exit down
I was
the
really
road.
Lost.
And I had AAA who was bringing me, thank God, for my mother. My mother's always thought about traveling, and she got me a AAA membership for Christmas. But the state trooper who stopped to see if I was okay jumped back when Willie shot his head out the side window, and, you know, he goes, "Lady, do you mind me asking a question?" I said, "Okay, do you want to see my driver's license or something?" And he goes, "No, what are you doing out here?" I said, "Singing, collecting stories." And he just shook his head.
So as you're driving and listening to other people and observing the way they live and having respectful dialogue with people, do you find, as you wrote the book, that it was sort of a spiritual and therapeutic journey for
Absolutely.
You?
Absolutely. Absolutely. I've always written, as I mentioned, and I had started a blog when we had our small farm in Kentucky, because there was a lot more time to think and write and watch things grow. So it took time. But I found my inspiration in the grassroots, simple things. Eva, I had at one time lived in a 5-bedroom, 3-bath house in Maryland and was a realtor. And after hiking a section of the Appalachian Trail with a friend a couple of times, came back and was just in shock, like, what am I doing in the Baltimore, Washington area? This is not the way I want to live.
Yeah.
And so as my children matured and dispersed, I made the decision to sell out. And to move rural.
And to rediscover where you really belong.
And it was...
You belong on the road,
probably,
singing John Denver's song.
Yeah. Okay, yeah. Ellen,
I'm in.
I'm hopping in, and we're gonna sing together.
Go on the road.
Sing. I just can't play any instruments.
That's all right.
So
I got them all.
The theme throughout your book is that there's so much commonalities with the people that you met along the way.
Common threads everywhere.
Right. And everyone has a story to tell, but... with your sympathy and empathetic nature, you could pretty much identify the communities and the neighborhoods. And you saw a lot of social issues. You saw a lot of different cultures, different religions. And as you drive and you talk and you meet with people, what goes through your head when you, politically, of course, you see so much stuff going on in our country. But at the end of the day, everybody wants to be loved and appreciated no matter where they live.
Absolutely. People just want somebody to hear them. They want somebody to hear them and to appreciate them and take them where they're at. And going forward, you know, you don't always disclose everything about yourself when you meet a new person, but when you find that common thread, you reach out with it and you connect, and then the dialogue starts.
Yeah.
And then you start learning, you know, I'm not so different. We just call it different things.
Yes.
And to be able to show respect, I mean, the one thing that sticks out in my mind forever and ever is I was going through Louisiana. I had visited my sister and brother-in-law in New Orleans, and it was in an oil refinery town, and I had no choice. I had to stop and get gas.
Yeah.
I saw it that time, Ellen. So I pulled in, and it was a very well-protected storefront that had bulletproof glass. It was very sweaty, and it was hot, and I had on a T-shirt. And I didn't know what it was, but I was soaked just because it was so hot and humid. And I got out, and I thought, I'm just going to fill up, and I'm going to get out of this area, because I didn't feel safe. Until I went in, the pump would not accept, would not give me a receipt. So I had to go into the shop with a bulletproof glass. And the guy behind the counter with one eye looked at me, and he looked at my shirt, and he said, I knows Keeneland. Keeneland is the local racetrack in Kentucky. It's like the racetrack. Me and my missus used to work there. And it was like from that point, I felt safe. He had said something to me. I didn't solicit it, I didn't ask for it, and he came out from behind that, and he came out and he says, I'm going to wash your windows for you. And I'm just going, thank you, you don't have to do that. And he goes, no, I do. And he talked about their experience for as long as I stood there, and he cleaned my windows. And I was in tears.
Yeah. Well, you know, everybody's just looking for love and acceptance.
Yep.
They just want somebody to listen sometimes. So as you're driving and you're having all these thoughts, and you've got your four boys and your mom and your grandson.
I have a daughter and three sons.
Your daughter, that's right. Your daughter.
My daughter is the oldest.
That's right. She takes care of the animals, right? Does she still
She has beach dog grooming.
That's right.
Is in Satellite Beach, yeah.
So as you're driving, and you do have a home with your mom, and you do have place with your sons and everything, at the end of the day, what gives you the most satisfaction?
Well, that's a tough one.
Wow, that's a loaded question.
That is,
Sita. Most satisfaction, if I feel like my conscience, my want to,
yeah,
and my actions are in agreement, and I've extended some sort of grace or compassion or forgiveness and received the same in a day.
Then you feel good about yourself.
I feel not just good about myself, but my place on the planet.
Yeah, because like I feel satisfied when I go to work and I do a good job.
Mm-hmm.
And I come home and I say I gave 8 hours of my very best. And now it's for my, and I feel satisfied.
Yeah.
And that I gave the world the best of Sita McGee. May not be perfect, but it's what I gave.
And I love going into work.
Right.
Because I people say, what do you do? And I say, at the grassroots level, I try to promote world peace, one person at a time, keep people calm, bring them down off ledges, and let them know it's going to be good.
Right. Well, it's the same thing with music. I mean, music is a new thing for me.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
And Mondays and Tuesdays are my favorite days because I hear from everybody that came to our shows over the weekend. Yeah. And they say, they connected with somebody they hadn't seen since high school, or they fell in love, or they met somebody new, or they remembered a song that brought them back to something, and they tell me their story. So all of those things, that's what life is all about.
Right.
This is what we're all talking about, is what life is really.
Remembering, but also remembering to consider potential for more.
Exactly.
Not more in give me more, but more in the sense of expansion, inclusion, embracing.
Giving back,
but also, Sita, being open to receive, which has been very difficult for me, because growing up, I was always taught self-sacrifice.
To give.
So when you finally allow yourself to receive, there's this little knot that you have to kind of loosen and shake and go, it's okay.
Yeah. So for our listeners who are tuning in, we're speaking with author Karen Weber. She just wrote a book called Crossing America and Finding Home. It's beautifully written, and I tell you, the roads as you drive them, in your case, oftentimes had bittersweet memories for you. For some reason, all the states you went to, Oregon, Maryland, Kentucky, which states have you been to and which ones are you planning to go to? Because you're meeting your friends from high school and you're meeting all the people that you grew up with. I noticed that people are very accommodating to you and the dogs.
I've been very fortunate. People have been very welcoming. Family, friends. I'll tell you, even a campground in Oregon that I went to just to get to a different part of Oregon with my dogs at one point, I drove into the campground. There was Camp Host, Kentucky University, University UK t-shirt on, and I just went, you gotta be kidding me.
Yeah. And I read sometimes you slept with the dogs outside, in your camper.
Sometimes I didn't have a travel trailer for very long because it was not all seasons. I thought it was. And the other thing was, this is post-COVID, but I didn't smell a propane leak at one point that a neighbor pointed out to me, and I immediately detailed it and I sold it because it was dangerous.
Yeah, that's in the book.
But I did tent camp. Yes, and sometimes I slept in the car with my dogs at rest stops.
So for the people who are listening to your story about a single female crossing America on the highways and Lord knows what, running out of gas, staying in motels, staying in campgrounds, having the animals for protection, not knowing who you're going to come in contact with, here's the biggie, health care. What happens if you get sick on the road? Do you have health insurance then? Do you have to stop at a different hospital? Who knows where you are? And in this day and age, we have to tell people where we are.
Absolutely.
They have to keep track of us.
Sure.
So how do you manage all of that while staying on the road?
I am conscious of what I put in my mouth.
Yes.
And I'm conscious of trying to stay healthy, but I also have a time of the year when I come back to Florida and I get a shebang of, health care.
The 60,000 mile checkup.
Yeah. Thank you. That's about right, Ellen.
That's what I say.
And if there's anything untoward, like last fall, I finally got to the point where a hip was not being kind to me and affecting my ability to move. And I had a hip replacement surgery, which was incredibly redemptive and freeing. And that's when this book came together, because I'm not a person who sits still well.
Yeah. What was the most difficult thing to write about?
Oh, the death of a dream. And
wow, that's powerful.
I can't go backwards, but what I will tell you is a son of mine gave me a book recently called Yes, After the Death of a Dream, written by a young man out in Portland, Oregon, Scott Erickson, who's an artist but also a pastor. And about how when we give everything to a dream and it doesn't work out, you have to save space for the possibility of something new happening.
Yeah.
In the Old Testament, and I'm not preaching to anybody, hear me, but in the Old Testament there is a passage in Isaiah that says, forget the former things. Behold, I am doing a new thing.
Well, that's
do
what
not now perceive it. And you have to hold on to that, and you have to say every day to yourself, there's something more. And I'm waiting for it, I'm pressing towards it, and when it comes, you know it, and you're so glad you did.
And I always think about the passages and sort of the jokes, too, that people say all the time. It was like I kept asking God for a sign, and he's like, I sent you a helicopter, I sent you a boat, I sent you a canoe, I sent you people, like, what are you going to do, right? But we're the type of people that act on it, that act on those moments where you get a fork in the road, you get a decision to make. And we make the best decisions for ourselves.
You
and we
make
hope
the best decision you can with the information you have at the time. And if it turns out not to be the very, 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 very best, you have to forgive yourself.
That's right.
And move on to the next thing and try the next
thing. I do that every day of my life. I forgive myself for everything.
That your
intention, I'm like, you're my best friend. I forgive
you. Yeah,
how many hours a day did you write? Because the book is, it's 336 pages?
The book is a compilation, Sita, of essays and observations and recollections. I did not purposely sit down 2 hours a day like any good disciplined writer would. That's not me.
Yeah.
I have to be inspired to write.
Right, and I love the picture here. Is that a picture you took?
It is. All the pictures are pictures I took, and I apologize they're not in color inside the book, but it was very expensive. This was a river through the Cascade Mountains in Oregon on the Stepping Stones book, which is a compilation of poetry. The one on the front of Crossing America, Finding Home, is actually, I think it's Kansas, with the wind turbines and the long road going off into the distance. And then on the back of the book, my favorite one is the horse, my horse, my first horse, Lady Latte, who was a rescued Durban.
Yeah, and I've known you for a long time, and I know I'm not a therapist, but I am a friend. And I think your heart was at that farm in Kentucky. And I know you grieve for it. And I grieved along with you for it. But, you know, like you just said, at some point, you have to let it go, right?
You do. And
I wish I'd known you then, because I would have come and planted vegetables and stayed there with
you. Oh, well, you would have been put to work. Nobody gets a free ride on a farm.
Right. That's true. That's so true.
I would have been with a hat on.
Preach, girl.
And an umbrella. Because, you know, I can't be out in the hot sun. But, yeah, I feel it throughout the book. I think that's why you keep coming back to Kentucky, because that's a big loss for you.
But, again, sometimes deep loss leads to a greater space to fill.
Right. Well, don't we all say all the time that there's a reason why God makes things happen, right? And we have to just figure out what that purpose was.
Right. And right? I will tell you that all five dogs that were a part of that farm are all buried under the big overcup white oak tree. And some people may say I'm a little off my rocker, but one of the reasons I came back from Oregon twice, One of the reasons, it wasn't the only reason, was because I knew one dog was getting ready to pass.
And you wanted him to be with
the
others.
And I wanted him to be at home.
So we only have like a minute left. If you met someone and they said, tell me about your book, and if you had like 30 seconds, 40 seconds, what would you say to them to encourage them to read that book?
It's a book written from my heart, and I would hope that it would encourage other people to feel affirmed that their stories have value too, and not to be afraid. I had some anxiety about publishing, but it's always been a dream to publish. And now that it's done, there's a lull, but you understand that risk is involved anytime you self-disclose, or you step out into an unknown you've never been in. But I believe in angels.
I do too.
And a legacy for your sons
and
your grandchildren.
I believe in people being put across your path in circumstances that you think you can't.
Like Ellen and I, right? And also, you're leaving a legacy behind for your son, your three sons, your daughter, and your grandson.
Not to be afraid.
Not to be afraid and follow your dreams.
Amen.
Right.
So I want to tell Karen Weber my really quick story. I played harmonica for the first time in front of probably 200 people at Earl's Hideaway on Saturday with my band and only had one lesson. So it's like one of those things that you have to keep prescribing
to
yourself.
Like we always say,
believe
in yourself. So the website, really quick, to find a book on Amazon or for your website?
Right. My website is thewhimsicalwayfarer.com.
And we will make sure all of that is posted on our website as well as all of our blog. It is a pleasure once again. We will see you next week here on Viewpoint with Sita and Friends each and every Monday here on 1510 WWBC, 1 p.m. Eastern Standard.